Just in time, Susan.
No, Susan, you are right on time.
Yeah. I knew. I was literally right on time. Sorry.
All right, I'll go ahead and call to order the BRAIT Transit Advisory Committee meeting for May 13th. Is there anyone here from the public that would like to comment? Anybody online? Okay, we'll move on to agenda item number 3, which is approval of the minutes of the March 11th meeting. Those were distributed in your packets. Unless there are any corrections, I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll make the motion.
All right. Second it. Thank you. All in favor of approving the minutes from March 11th, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, minutes approved. Item number 4 is the fiscal year 2027 BRAIT budget and work program.
I will kick us off. Are you going to
kick off? Adam with Stanton Development Association is on. Let's see if I
can. Hi there, can everybody hear me?
We can hear you. I just wanted to do a quick introduction since this is your first meeting.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. Quick introduction. I just started about a month ago in the role of executive director for the SCDA. So I'm still kind of finding my way here. I'm learning everything that everybody does. So really, I'm just about listening. I'd love to meet with you guys one-on-one whenever. My door is always open.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Adam.
And thanks, it's nice to meet you. Okay, now I think we're good to move into agenda item number 4, which is the fiscal year 27 budget and work program.
Devin's gonna tee up our slides here. All right, well, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for being here on a gray and kind of cloudy afternoon. As you know, I guess for the past couple of meetings, we've been kind of teasing a little bit about the budget and financial situation of transit across the Commonwealth. And so today I wanted to give a brief overview of our BRAIT Transit budget for FY27, how that is shaping up, and then I'm gonna turn it over to Devin and Danielle and they can talk about all the exciting activities and work program for the upcoming year. So you wanna just switch to the next slide there? I think we've kind of been teasing this for a while, but you know, our costs this year are going up a little more than we have typically seen. There's a number of factors for that. The largest driving force is the contract re-procurement, and we knew that was going to happen because being in a previously negotiated contract, we were kind of locked into a certain escalation rate, and our costs to operate have not kept up with inflation over the past, I guess, 5 years post-COVID. So all the price increases we've been seeing across the country since COVID, we've been largely insulated from in our contract because of that. So we knew when we went back out to re-procure that no matter what, it was going to go up. And so it has. With that, though, comes a new fleet. So part of that increase in cost, which I'll show you in a moment, is going to encompass all new vehicles, which were sorely needed. So that'll be a nice fresh face for folks out on the street to see those new vehicles. It also accounts for increased costs for labor to make sure that we're paying operators a competitive wage and that they can, you know, have good benefits and good pay for the work they do. And it also encompasses the cost of maintenance, which we're seeing increase in cost in that for both facility and the vehicles. So that is the largest driver of our budget increase. We've also seen, as you can see, fuel prices. No one is immune from that. In fact, we've already had to readjust our budget 3 times since January to account for the ever-growing. I was like, surely $4 a gallon is as high as it'll go. And we're like, nope, keep plugging that in. The increased maintenance costs, you know, the cost of tariffs on parts, we're seeing delays in getting parts for both the facility and vehicles and the additional costs that come along with that. Cost of living and labor, not just for our transit operators, but for our staff as well and for the general labor market in this area to remain competitive. And then finally, an increase in service hours for paratransit, which Devin will talk a little bit more about in her presentation. But those are generally kind of the considerations that we knew and took into account when building our budget for this upcoming year. Next slide, please. So we provided a comparison from FY26 to 27, and we will send these slides out afterwards, so if you want to take them back to your agency and look at them more in depth, you can. But we wanted to show a breakdown and comparison from last year's budget, or this current year's budget, to next year. We did take extreme efforts to reduce our costs everywhere else that we could. In fact, our budget is such right now that there is really nothing we could cut to get it down any further. But we wanted to do our due diligence to make sure that we're not, you know, missing out on opportunities for cost savings. We actually were able to reduce the cost in our CSPDC staff wages and benefits by shifting staff time to other grants. So, you know, looking for other opportunities for other grant programs that we can share our workload with, such as our MPO budgets, other discretionary grants that we've gotten. So we were able to actually increase our staff capacity and also lower the costs. Our professional services, that typically covers things like our website hosting, legal services, any of that. We are transitioning away from using consultants, so there's not anything accounted for in FY26 or 27, so you don't see that much of a change. But going forward, with the use of AI tools and our staff's ability to have some time back in their days to do transit planning, we think we can do a lot more of what we were doing with consultants in-house. So that's been really exciting, and that'll be a huge cost savings going forward. Fuel, you can see the cost increase there. Our travel, training, and meeting expenses, we've been able to drop those by about $9,000 because we're utilizing other discretionary grants for that as well. DRPT in the state has a couple of different programs that we can use to support professional development and travel, and so we try to utilize those at any possibility to keep those costs low. Communications and printing, those are our, you know, typical brochure printing, and anytime we make a change to the system, that requires printing all new brochures. So we try to, you know, moderate how frequently we're doing that, but we also want all that information to be up to date for folks in the community so they're not getting an outdated bus schedule. Repairs and maintenance for our facility. Our facility is aging at this point, and so that does require some upkeep with HVAC and some of those other components. Anytime we have to do a major repair or replacement, we do put in for capital grants for those. So for this upcoming year, we're expecting to receive a capital grant to help us replace our bus wash, some of the mobile lifts, and the tire machine. Those will all not be part of our operating budget. This just reflects things like, you know, maintenance, plumbing, HVAC, all of those kinds of things. And then the total breakdown there, basically, we're looking at about a $1.7 million difference between FY26 and 27, which is actually not as significant of an increase as we thought we were going to see going into this whole process. So if you want to go to the next slide, please. Just wanted to show a quick breakdown of our different funding sources. We have largely federal funds. We get about 61% of our funding from the federal government through federal formula grants. Those grants are based on formulas set by Congress through the transportation authorization bills, and they only change your allocation if your regional circumstances change drastically. So like your population increases at the census. So those have been pretty, you know, stagnant over the years, but we are still 1 year behind in spending those because we had so much CARES money during 2020 that they've continued to allocate our yearly allocation, and we have not caught up to spending that. We will likely catch up this year, and then going forward will be dependent on what that specific year's allocation is. But the federal money does comprise most of our budget. Our state funding is about 22 to 25%, and that is also formula-based. And then the purple slice there shows the local partner match, which is all of the assessments that we collect from all of you. That represents about 9% of our total budget. And then the other two sources we have are our lease revenue and income from our transit facility and our Lewis Street Hub, and any kind of interest we earn on bank accounts or anything like that. So that represents about 2%. And then also our fares, of course, and those represent about 2% of our revenue sources as well. So just to give you kind of some transparency on what we are doing to keep costs low, we want to make sure that we're being good stewards of local money, all of your money. We know your budgets are not infinite, and so we wanted to really highlight what we're doing to make sure that not only are we accounting for this year's increase responsibly, but that we're not continuing to run a system that's unsustainable long term. We don't want to continue to see 6, 10, 12% increases year over year. So we are going to be doing quite a bit of system evaluation and route analysis to see where we can find efficiencies in the route. I think that there's an opportunity to revisit some of our routes and see if they're currently working as well as they should be. Maybe there's a hybrid approach. You know, we completed our microtransit study last year, so looking at where that might come in and if there's any cost savings that can be found by having kind of a hybrid system. So we'll be doing a lot of data analysis in the background this year to do that. Some strategic marketing and outreach. We know that we currently, we have not seen strong ridership growth across the Bright system, but we're also not doing anything proactively right now to generate that growth. Our staff has had limited resources to be able to get out and really get into the community. And so Devin's gonna talk about what we're gonna do to change that here in a little bit, but doing some strategic outreach to grow that ridership, which in turn grows fares. Maximizing grant opportunities. This year in our FY27 six-year improvement plan for the state, we are all of the applications that we submitted were recommended for funding. So that includes some capital applications for bus shelter amenities, bus shelters and amenities, some marketing stuff, all the things that I'm stealing from Devin's presentation right now. but we really did maximize every grant opportunity we could to find funding sources outside of our traditional operating budget. And pursuit of additional funding partners. We want to bring more people to this table. So looking at, are there other community organizations in our region? Are there other localities that we could serve in a way where we can bring more people to the table, which then, you know, kind of spreads the cost of operations across more people and reduces your local match as well. And then last but not least, we have some CSPDC reserve funds. In previous years, if we've not needed to use all of the funds we've collected, particularly in our state funding, we've had a surplus in a few years, that money has gone into our reserve fund for instances exactly like this. We typically keep a pretty healthy capital reserve fund in case something goes wrong at the facility that we need to replace and we can't get a capital grant. Or in this case, we are intentionally using some of that money to cap the amount of increase that any of you would see in your local match for this upcoming year. So that being said, we will be sending out our memorandum of understandings letters to all of you. We've met individually with each of the localities already, but for the community partners, you'll get your MOA by the end of this week with your local partner match for the upcoming year. If you have any questions or concerns about that amount, please call us and we can set up a one-on-one meeting. But know that we did put in place a cap of no more than 12% more than what you paid last year. I know that's a larger number than most people would like to hear. But you know, we knew that this contract change and the fuel prices were gonna drive things up, but we know that you can't absorb that large of an increase in a single year in a lot of your agency budgets. I mean, we probably could not do that ourselves if we didn't have these reserve funds. So we are going to intentionally use those funds to buffer that impact to all of you for this year and next year. And we'll see how the costs continue to increase or whether they stabilize after the second year. But we did want to just be transparent with all of you about that. You know, we know that costs are rising, but we are doing everything we can to try to minimize that, and we will do everything we can to minimize the impact to all of you as well, while still delivering the same service that you've all come to depend on. Next slide. Yes, questions. So, like I said, if you have any specific questions about your partner match or your program, please reach out to Devin or myself, and we can talk one-on-one. But if anyone has any general questions here today, I'm happy to answer them. Yes?
I just wanted to know about the fuel assumptions. Like, I expected it to be higher from 26 to 27, and it looked like it only went up, like, 90,000 or something. Like, why isn't it higher?
So we actually we typically project higher fuel costs in our budgets than what we visualize. So last year we projected, I think, $3.90 a gallon for our budget, which we were well under that for most of this past year. So it last year's budget was artificially inflated for that protection factor. And so, yes, it is a much, it's probably going to be a larger gap than that $95,000, but from actual to next year's. But we do try to put in a little bit of a buffer for our budgeting reasons. Yes?
Just a quick thought. I know gasoline is one price, diesel fuel is another, a lot higher apparently.
Yes.
How does y'all's fleet compare diesel versus gas, or is it all one or the other?
Yes, so we are split. So all of our Afton Express buses that go over the mountain are diesel, so that's four of our vehicles. The rest of our fleet is gasoline, so that helps out a lot. And under our new contract, we are actually moving down in size on some of our vehicles, so all of our paratransit will be operated using like four transit vans instead of the body on chassis buses. Mm-hmm. So that'll bring some of that cost down as well. We did not account for those cost savings in the budget because I just really don't know how that's going to shake out yet, and we didn't want to shortchange ourselves, but I do think that we will recognize some actual savings. And of course, our vehicles will be more fuel efficient than they have been because they're newer, so hopefully that will help somewhat. But yeah, we try to move away from diesel as much as possible. Those bigger buses that go over the mountain do still primarily come in diesel format. But
sure. But
yeah, $6 or more a gallon in diesel is hurting us right now with Afton Express. And so TBD on how that shakes out for the rest of this fiscal year, but we have at least been able to account for it in the upcoming fiscal year.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, well, I'll let Devin and Danielle tell you guys all that you're gonna get this year for your partner match.
Yeah, like Paula said, we have a lot of exciting work planned for fiscal year 27. So we're really beyond delighted that Kayla Dixon, our JMU graduate assistant, will be joining us full-time as our new outreach and engagement planner. And she'll be starting in July. So she'll be helping us enter this new fiscal year with more of a renewed sense of enhancing our community presence and building upon all of our community relationships. So she'll be serving as our primary liaison with the public, facilitating community involvement, and increasing communication and create targeted engagement to make sure those in the community are aware of our services. So a lot of the times we find that that education component of letting people know all the services that are provided are usually where we have a lot that we need to build upon. So building up this awareness and education will foster feelings of confidence, but also comfort for passengers when trying out Brightbus, and also enhancing the rider experience, like creating some education materials for partner-specific stops. So if you have a large population utilizing like Blue Ridge Community College, trying to like make sure the students know when the bus is coming and how it operates. Mm-hmm. And additionally, all of this will be extremely useful when we leading up to our transit development plan. Like Paula said, we'll be kicking that off mid FY27. So having these relationships in place and these communication outlets in place will also be able to hopefully make for a rich public engagement and feedback phase for determining the future of Bright, because really we want to know what the folks need who are utilizing the service along with your needs as well. And then marketing. So Afton Express got a marketing grant last fiscal year that we've been doing a lot of TV advertising, targeted ads. So we're replicating pretty much the same thing for Bright. So we will, that was recommended under the 6-year improvement plan. So the Commonwealth Transportation Board will be meeting in June to approve the staff recommendation. So this will afford us a comprehensive and targeted marketing campaign that will be able to increase public awareness, understanding, and the equitable use of Bright services. It'll include print and digital ad placement, some geofencing advertising, some TV broadcast advertising, as well as photography for an updated image catalog. We will get Kyle to also be in our Bright bus photos. And we'll be able to refresh the website as well. And then we'll also have printing for some wrap cards and those partner-specific materials that I cited earlier. We'll also be able to create some informational how-to ride videos that will further promote and enhance the rider experience, and also driving new passengers to be able to utilize the service, seeing how easy and convenient transit can be. And then route planning, we continue to evaluate the ever-growing transportation needs of the service area. So as such, we will be looking at the BRCC shuttles route this fiscal year. So we'll be assessing this route to further find efficiencies and to ensure optimal utilization and additional access to those communities along Route 11 and Route 42. So with the continuous growth and evolution of that corridor in our service area,
we just found that this was the right time to make sure the route is actually servicing those riders to the best of its ability. So to do this, we will be evaluating the ridership, we'll be looking at the route alignment as well as the timing of the route, and that process will include us coordinating with those localities and the stakeholders along that route to understand their needs and conduct public engagement. We'll also be considering the impact of current and planned constructions on the route performance. As you know, 81, that entire stretch is getting a lot of construction, so being aware of how that might implicate timing, but also there's a Mountain Crawford Park and Ride Lot smart scale application that went through, so making sure that we're addressing everything that's going to be coming online so we don't get into a predicament of putting something out there and then something changes and we have to go back to the drawing board. And then lastly, we'll be evaluating that route alignment to see whether a loop or bi-directional service works best. And then expanding on access. So as you all know, we've been trying to get to Saturday paratransit service, but during the weekday, there's just so much demand for the service as our population ages. So we've been utilizing those extra hours that we've built into the budget year over year and just adding that back into weekday service. So this year, I think the buses are finally starting to balance out during the weekday with those three. So we are able to look at Saturday service finally. So we'll be able to add four, we budgeted for 4 hours on Saturdays. So that'll start us off, and then we can kind of see where the need is. And then as we're developing the FY28 budget, we can assess whether or not we need another four in another area or just do eight and the bus kind of circulate however it needs to.
Devin, can I jump in there real quick? The other thing I wanted to mention, as on our new vehicles, we'll be using a new route planning and dispatch software, so that'll really kick in for our demand service for paratransit. It'll provide more dynamic routing. So right now we have very static routing where people call and sign up for a time slot, but if they change or they don't show, then that bus can't really, you know, react quickly. But this will be much like what you kind of see in like Uber or Lyft kind of services, where the software will then redirect the driver to the next nearest stop or opportunity to pick somebody up. So we will hopefully be able to serve even more people within the existing hours on the weekdays because of that dynamic routing capability, but then also adding the Saturday service. And it was really important to us that we kept these 4 hours in rather than cutting them in this year's budget. It would have saved about $200,000, but we thought that the value of having that access for particularly senior citizens and those who have disabilities to get around on Saturday was far more important than those cost savings. If we do find that the dynamic routing improves service enough on the weekdays that we no longer need those extra weekday vehicles, then we can, you know, actualize some savings there. But this has been a long time coming. We've put it off for year after year because we wanted to meet the daily service, but I think it really is important that we were able to offer that service on Saturdays just like we do our fixed route.
Perfect. And then last but not least, investing in some of our infrastructure. So the last round of transit state grants, we were successful in securing grant funds to purchase and install three shelters, one in each locality. And so we have been, all of those will be one for each. So Waynesboro, that will go towards their transit access project, which they also have the great news that they were recommended for funding for their transit access project, which identifies five stops within Waynesboro to add shelters and improve ADA access and additional pedestrian infrastructure. So one of those will be going towards that, and then Augusta County, we did request, and it's recommended for funding to have some extra funds to improve ADA access for the shelter that's at the Augusta Health facility in Stewart's Draft and Food Lion. So we'll be able to install the shelter there, but also improve ADA access at that location. And then Stanton, we're coordinating with them to finalize that installation location using some stop level data. So we'll be meeting with Susan and Rodney here in the coming weeks to take a look at what makes sense to be the best location for Stanton. So with that, I'm gonna turn it over to Danielle.
Okay, so for the Acton Express. So this year, FY26 was a very big year. We spent 2025
really building a foundation for next year and beyond. We designed and launched a stronger schedule. We implemented a significant marketing campaign. And after 4 years of consecutive growth, we're now seeing an even starker increase in ridership, which is likely due to that new schedule and marketing campaign. Next slide, please. So our biggest task in 2026, FY27, will be to build on this momentum to sustain the growth that we're seeing. So we'll be tracking whether the schedule changes are holding that ridership, so analyzing data to see if the increase that we are seeing really sticks. And to do this, we'll be looking at which trips and stops are most utilized, identify what is working, see if anything is not working. Additionally, we'll be monitoring whether growth continues post-campaign, so our transit marketing campaign for the Afton Express officially ends on June 30th. We, of course, will still be marketing, but the big push will end, so we'll be keeping our eyes on that date to monitor trends once that push ends then. Additionally, as mentioned, a new fleet will be deployed July 1st, which will be a milestone for service. Afton Express riders have longer, more demanding commutes than your typical local fixed route, so this upgrade will be really appreciated by them. Additionally, the new Afton buses will have more room to grow to meet that rising demand and future growth. And should ridership trends hold, as we do expect that they will, the data will then inform future conversations regarding service expansion, frequency, or any other changes.
Can anyone spy the BTAC number in this photo? So just know that when we do this bright photo shoot, we will be requesting your services as models.
We did not budget to hire actors. You guys get to stand in.
Right, does anybody have any questions? All right, we can move along to agenda item number 5, which is future bus stop requests.
Yes, thank you. So if you were at last meeting 2 months ago, we did have a couple of bus stop requests, and through the conversation around those requests, Susan made a great point about the review process and what kind of due diligence and background work we can do ahead of time before bringing it to you to review. And historically, because we've been growing for years, we've not had too many constraints when we receive new bus stop requests. We could typically accommodate them as long as they were safe and accessible. We are now at a point where our routes are pretty constrained, and adding a new stop might mean sacrificing service somewhere else, or might mean reconfiguring where that route travels to reach that. And so that, combined with Susan's comments, we took a step back to evaluate what our process for reviewing these requests would be. As a reminder, we get bus stop requests from community partners, from individual riders, from our funding partners, and sometimes from developers when they're putting in their site plans for new development. What we are proposing to do going forward would be that when we receive a request, that we will bring it to primarily the locality in which the stop would be going in, and as well as any major funding partners who that would impact. And you're all welcome to participate in that process, but it may be a small enough change that that's not something that you want to have a separate 2 or 3 meetings to talk about. But if it is a significant change, we will bring everybody who is impacted by that route to the table to talk about it. So we would envision those meetings happening outside of the BTAC regularly scheduled meetings. Once we've met with the partners and the localities and have come up with kind of a idea of what the priorities are for serving that request and what constraints there might be, the CSBDC staff will then mock up in Remix, our transit planning software, our recommended change. And then at that point, we would take it to our contractor to ask them to vet that change to see if it's safe and accessible for their vehicles, whether there's any timing concerns, and only then, after all of that has been done, will we bring it to the BTAC to vote on that. So nothing you see at the BTAC should be a surprise. If it affects your area or a route that serves your region, you should see it before it gets here. And we will also, I think, really lean on you all in that process of review to make sure that we're taking into consideration adjacent properties and other routes. For example, a perfect example is the River City Breadbasket request we received from Waynesboro. when we went back to the drawing board and looked at that, we realized that one of the issues we were trying to solve was how the bus could turn around from that stop to get back to a previous road where they could then turn at a stoplight, because it was much safer to access the main road at that stoplight. Well, upon expanding out on the map, we noticed that there were other locations nearby that might benefit from transit service, and could we potentially swing it out as a loop so that not only are we adding this new stop, but that we're serving an adjacent need nearby. And so I think those are the kind of nuances that are missed when we try to rush these requests through. And I know that our staff have always felt a sense of urgency because we really do want to accommodate all of the requests we get. We know that for developers, they're doing their best to try to add transit access into their development plans, but they have timelines as well. And we don't want to unnecessarily delay things, but I do think that this process requires multiple iterations and steps. So that being said, the new process we would expect to take probably no less than 6 months, which I think is reasonable for making a change to the system that could have repercussions down the road. So that's all just to say, if you are all comfortable with that process and are willing to commit to meeting with us when these requests come up, we would really appreciate that, and we'll try to do what we can to make our communications to stop requesters clear that this is not going to be something that gets approved at the next meeting, that it is likely a 6-month process, and so they have managed expectations about how long this will take, because we want to get it right. And I think we still do want to try to accommodate as many requests as we can, but that might mean some give and take somewhere else. And so I think it means more time spent on those decisions.
Is the 6 months like a worst case scenario? Like if there's anything that we on the city side could, you know, do to make it a priority, are you like factoring in, well, you know, Stanton might take 2 months to set up a meeting, like, you know?
I mean, well, we wanted to definitely be mindful of the fact that you all have other commitments and to give you enough time, but I think that that's a reasonable timeline. This body only meets every other month, so between two meetings is 2 months. So from the time that we learn about it and we start those conversations, it might be 2 meetings later that we bring the decision to the table. But certainly, the more that you all can do to help us get through that review process up front, our contractor, we will communicate the same to them, and then getting out and doing the safety checks and the timing checks. So we can strive for less time than that, but I think that communicating that expectation at least gives us all a little comfort room, so that we're not under the gun. I know Devin is the kindest person in our office, who is frequently bombarded by phone calls from developers saying, when is it going to get approved? When is it going to get approved? I have to send in my site plans. So I think the more that we can do to tell them up front, like, this is going to take a little while, and that's actually maybe a good thing. The localities could help communicate to developers when they come to you, is that if they want to add these amenities, that there is lead time with that, and that they need to account for that in their review process.
I like that proposal. I often find myself not knowing what I don't know when we have new and not knowing really what questions to ask. So if those questions are kind of vetted through the locality and through the partners and then presented here, I like that.
All right. Well, then that is what we will proceed with. We are still reviewing the requests that came in at the last meeting. Like I said, we're working with Waynesboro right now to try to implement the River City Breadbasket sooner than later, because that doesn't require a whole lot of change. We'll run some timing checks after July 1st and make sure that that doesn't put any extra time constraint on that route. But the others for the Housing Authority, we're working the background to try to vet those and see if there's other alternatives we can come up with. But once we have something in the affirmative, we'll bring it back to you to review and vote on.
Great. Are there any other questions on that one? Okay, we can move to agenda item number 6, which is turnkey contract transition.
You guys get to hear a lot from me today. just a brief update on our contract transition. Our new contractor comes in and takes effect on July 1st. We are working with them and with VRT. VRT has been wonderful in helping with this transition. Most of the staff, we hope, will stay on with the new contractors, so we hope that you'll still see the same friendly faces you're used to seeing out on our routes. The new fleet has been ordered. Like I mentioned, we are getting some smaller vehicles for the paratransit. That will definitely help with some of the streets and the narrow streets that, you know, apartment complexes say can, you know, we get a bus that comes up through here. We can't run a bus through there necessarily, but the paratransit vehicles are smaller and they will now be even smaller. So that'll be, you know, they could potentially back up into someone's driveway or an apartment complex roadway if need be. Don't quote me on that because I haven't asked our contractors what their policy is for that. But either way, it will definitely give us more flexibility in some of our historic neighborhoods that have really narrow streets. The new contractor is in town this week, so we'll be meeting with them tomorrow to check in and see where they are in their progress from onboarding and making final decisions about technology and training schedules. But our hope is that on July 1st, the passengers do not experience anything new except for a new vehicle shows up to pick them up, but that they should not know really that there's any difference in operations. And like I said, I think Phil is with us on the team's call, but you know, this is the last meeting that we will have VRT represented at, and we just want to say a huge thank you to them for all of the time that they've spent on this service over the years. I mean, they really did, they are the foundation of this service, and like I said, we hope that many of their staff will stay on and continue to serve the Bright region, but we could not have gotten this far without them, that is for sure. I think that's all I have.
Great, thank you. We can move to agenda item number 7, the contractor update.
That's VRT team.
Right, good afternoon, everyone. I do want to first and foremost say thank you, Paula, for the kind words. That really is has been a pleasure and an honor to serve the community there. Our ties go deep in that area, and just super glad to have been a part of something so great. With regards to passenger ridership, we've seen some increases in ridership at Bright Transit over the past couple months, bouncing from February of 2026 at about 17,033 rides. March, we saw it go up to 18,638, and that was a 9% jump from February. And then April, we just ended with 19,405 rides, so another 4% increase over March. So it is great to see those ridership numbers bouncing up. We are pleased that we're able to provide full transit service without fail as we navigate these new waters of transition to the new company. As Paula mentioned, staffing, we are also pleased that our dedicated employees in the Stanton, Augusta, Waynesboro area, they continued their outstanding service to the community. They're clocking in every day through this transition and making sure that our passengers that need to get to the grocery store, need to get to their jobs, that need to get to dialysis, that those passengers have their ride without fail. So just our heart is in service, and our people there are just doing a fantastic job. And yeah, I'll turn it back over to you all.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, is there any other business?
I'll do the boring compliance update. Our Title VI plan is out for public comment. You all received that in the original email for the BTAC meeting last week. It will be out for public comment until June the 4th, and then we will take that to the CSPDC Board of Commissioners for full approval at their June 12th meeting, and then we will be able to upload that into FTA's system to get their blessing on that plan, and we will stay in compliance because this plan does have to be updated every 3 years. So there's my boring update.
Okay. Now for the exciting.
I want another fun note. The Afton Express was awarded with a UVA Sustainability Leadership Award last week. Our team went over to accept that award with our partners at UVA. This beautiful picture back on the table, if you take a look on your way out, instead of a plaque or a certificate, they awarded these kind of hand-done paintings from local artists. So we are happy to add that to our accolades. We don't know who nominated us, neither does UVA, so whoever that person was, we really appreciate it, but I think it's tremendous to be recognized for that and showing how important the Afton Express is to helping both the university and the city and Charlottesville meet their sustainability goals. So just happy to be recognized for that.
So if there's no other business to come before the TAC, we can stand adjourned, and our next meeting is on July 8th. Thank you all for coming
up. Thank you guys.
Don't forget to sign the sign-in sheet on your way out.